You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What are you even worried about? It's Worry Week on The Wire.
This Waitangi Day is the first one for ages that my band and I are performing. So I'm hosting a Every Day is Waitangi Day gathering at my house. And Patty and I will do a few songs. And we'll just have lots of people around that kind of get that and spend their time together.
Lovely. And so can you tell me a bit about Every Day is Waitangi Day? What do you mean by that?
I think February the 6th is an important time to kind of focus people's attention on the treaty. But really, it can end up being a distraction from the fact that every day we need to be looking at how we deal to some of the systemic issues that arise from ongoing colonisation. So, for example, this morning I've spent my morning researching for a documentary series I'm doing on treaty settlements and just going through the history and doing a lot of reading and understanding the colossal injustice that's happened in our history and the unbelievable generosity and compassion of Māori and not reaching for arms, I think that's worth celebrating.
And do you think that's something that's sort of ignored by the media and sort of by mainstream discourse?
Yeah, I think it's all too easy to jump on inflammatory headlines, to make inflammatory headlines, and I understand that the media compete with each other, so they will go on about the relativity clause that triggers for Ngaitahu and Tainui so that they get, you know, an inflation-adjusted amount each time the treaty settlements reach a certain peak, because this was the first negotiated. But people often don't go into the fact that they only receive 1% of their total quantified loss. So, you know, and it's okay to have a laugh at the likes of Don Brash, but then do we really look at ourselves and the organisations that we're working within and how the structures and the culture there are not conducive to a treaty relationship? So I think that that's where we need to put some attention on. It's a very exciting space. It's one that those of us that are in the music industry are kind of grappling with, because I think the time is right for that discussion. There are not a lot of models out there that you can point to and go, well, that organisation has got a great treaty relationship going on. There's shared power and decision-making. So it's a challenge, but it's quite an exciting one.
Yeah, how do you think we could sort of go about deconstructing the way that sort of media outlets work and sort of try to remodel it in a way that's more aligned with the treaty?
I think one of the first things is for the media is to try and encourage the media to look inside. Look at your own institution. You know, how many, what is the relationship there? Is there some kind of a treaty partnership that's going on there with, say, at governance level? And at management, that's reflected in the operational level. So until media organisations really start to sort of think, oh, hang on, maybe I'm a little bit part of the problem, then they're not going to really get to the nub of the issue.
Do you think views are sort of on Waitangi on the treaty have been sort of changing over the last few years, or do you think it's sort of always been pretty steady?
I think there are a lot of people now that don't see the treaty as a threat. They see that the values and the kind of relationships that it represents are actually good for all of us. So, you know, te kawarau o maki places arahui on the Waitakere. Now, the morons and the idiots out there that don't care about the bush and don't care about Māori will carry on regardless. But a lot of people that have a care for the environment, that understand the rationale behind that, who think it's perfectly sensible and can't understand why the council and central government don't back that sort of whakaaro up. So I think there is a growing understanding that that the treaty is a good thing, and, you know, we've seen that in TPPA protests and the such like. But there's still kind of this need to really confront that hard questions and debate that we're not often having.
And what sort of things would you say to the sort of people that are ignoring the Rahui and sort of like dismissing the treaty?
I think that one of the problems is that's exacerbated the whole issue is this kind of ideology that, you know, it's all about me, it's the individualism thing. So a common sense approach would say, well, you know, do you understand that you're ignoring the Rahui is having an impact on this forest that you say is so beautiful you want to enter? Can you think beyond yourself to the next generation? Can you see that everything is interconnected, people, environment, the lot, that we're all, you know, interdependent? So you have to try and find a trigger to, you know, push any button that you can. It's a challenge.
And how do you feel about what the government's doing in terms of honouring the treaty at the moment? Like, I mean, Jacinda Ardern is staying for 5 days, which is the longest time a prime minister has stayed in Waitangi. Do you think this is enough or a good start, or do you think more needs to be done?
I think it's a start that the Prime Minister is spending so much time at Waitangi. There is a large Māori caucus in the Labour government. There's more Māori in Parliament than ever. It's still operating within a Pākehā-controlled you know, infrastructure. So they're still operating within that, the notion that Māori come under the Crown, not that there's a relationship, an ongoing relationship. I mean, a meaningful one, is still very much an advisory role. So it's early days. I guess the proof is in the pudding, isn't it? You know, how much power the Māori caucus can have to advance treaty issues. Will the government actually be able to, or be interested or willing to kind of transform the way it does things in that kind of way that they operate within Parliament? So that there's a more meaningful engagement between the Crown and the Māori members in there. I mean, there's some exciting challenges that face those that are kind of leading the country. And then there's a lot of people outside that are working towards models that can, you know, make a change. But, you know, as I say, I'm working on this documentary series now, looking at treaty settlements, and it's definitely hard to keep your positivity up.
When's this documentary series going to be out?
June, July, something like that. So it's one way of kind of... I haven't been involved in treaty settlements, so it's not an area that I'm familiar with. So learning about this has been a steep learning curve for me. And I'm hoping that we will be able to demonstrate and show to New Zealanders the reality behind the headlines, and do it in a way that's very personal so people can understand there are real people involved with real pain, and to understand, you know, the history and where we are as a nation and how we can move forward if we deal to these things in a really meaningful way.
Do you think that's sort of an important way to sort of change the way that the population views the treaty, is to sort of give them more of an understanding of what actually has happened and of the injustices that have sort of been ignored?
Yes, I do. I think that, you know, the people that I know that have led treaty settlement, they're ordinary people that have stepped up to a really extraordinary challenge. And it's a very difficult one. It's totally Crown dominated, and the framework is totally within the Crown's, you know, they hold all the power. But if I think back to Ngaitahu, I interviewed Sir Tipene O'Regan, Rick Toe and Charlie Crofts many years ago. Now, one was a teacher, one was a freezing worker, and one was a taxi driver when they took the Crown on, when they took their claim to the government. You know, these three men found themselves in Parliament, in the Beehive, talking to the Prime Minister to try and get their claim back on track. These are ordinary people that had a huge responsibility and a whole series of compromises that they had to work through. And when you hear them speak, you know, it's remarkable. I mean, one of them says, we just wanted everything back to the way it was before. And the other ones are going, well, we just know it's never going to be like that. So how much of a, you know, a compromise can we make here? And I think that when people hear those stories, they might be able to relate to them in a way that they can't when they see, you know, iwi get $2.5 billion from the government and blah, blah, blah. They can't really relate to it. But when you hear the real stories, you can sort of think, well, you know, that could have been my uncle. My God, that could be me.
Worry Week on The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.